Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We welcome in the voice of the Houston Texans, our good friend. He joins us every Friday in the 8 o'clock hour, Mark Vandermeer. Vandy, what's happening?
Hello, boys.
How are you?
Nothing going on this week, right?
No, we didn't get to chat with you last week because we were both out. So
yeah,
this is
that
cool.
That was actually great, by the way, with you guys out. No, I'm kidding. No, it was good. Cecil Wade did a great job.
Yeah.
They really did.
Yep.
That's the new morning show on Sports Radio 69. I hate to break it to you right now.
I'm
from HR, okay? Mitch and Murray sent me from downtown on a mission of mercy. That's a very esoteric reference from Glengarry Glen Ross.
So yeah, you're right. Nothing really going on. Ironically, we're going to probably lead in here with the baseball stuff because it's the biggest story going. It's the biggest national story going right now. Mm-hmm. I guess just first off, what was your reaction to all the press conference and hoopla yesterday?
Well, you know, look, there's no way you can apologize that's going to make it feel any better for anybody. Really? I mean, it's true, right? I mean, what could they have said? They might have been able to apologize better, but it's not going to take away what happened, all right? And I want to go backwards just a moment here. I'm still blown away that this could actually even happen. Like, how does this go on for even more than an inning with the garbage can stuff? Every time I see those videos, I'm thinking, why doesn't the manager in the other dugout say, wait, what is going on? Can you stop it?
That was what was so weird about it, was that they got away for it as long as they did.
This Farquhar guy from the White Sox, who was having quite this pitcher from the White Sox, who had to call his catcher out to change signs because he's hearing something on, like, September 21st, that Farquhar is treated as this sleuth, this Sherlock Holmes, that he was able to discern it. And it had been months, you're right, Mark, of just gong, gong,
gong. How does everybody not notice it?
I've talked to people that sit behind the dugout that said they never noticed it. So I guess it's just one of those things that might have been muted enough.
Yeah.
And on those videos you watch, I don't know if they amplify the sound
audio.
But yeah, maybe it's just muted enough that it just... You're in a stadium or a ballpark, though. You hear stuff all the time, kind of like clanks and stuff and everything.
But I'm in the other dugout, and they have nothing better to do but sit there, you know, over the rail. Like,
they're sitting there.
How do they not notice it?
You're trying to steal signs all the time, and you are watching the other dugout to try to steal the manager's signs and whatnot. So as you're so attuned to that, you know, there's this famous old psychological study, Mark, where they have these people watch a basketball game, and they tell them specifically, I want you to tell me how many times the team wearing the black jerseys passes the ball and how many times the team wearing the white jersey passes the ball. So they have them sitting there, and these people are watching the video focused intently on it.
Right.
In the middle of the video, a man in a gorilla suit comes out onto the basketball court, twirls around a little bit, and then walks off the basketball court. They ask afterwards, what did you think of the gorilla? The majority of people watching said, what gorilla?
They didn't see it.
They didn't see it. So I think it's one of these things where
is the gorilla.
You're focused on what you're focused on, and you're focused on stealing traditional signs and whatnot, and they just never even notice the banging garbage can.
I just can't believe they wouldn't notice with as many people that are involved with this sport just watching it.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. The other thing is this. AJ Hinch is sitting there, standing there, whatever, in the dugout, managing the team, and he hears this, and it had to make his skin crawl after a while. Either he's totally into it, or if he's that against it, he's got to do something about it.
He smashed monitors.
And I can't – well, he did. But how do the other players – the Nuremberg defense and defense, and if people don't know what that is, that's – I was a cog in the machine. I was following orders. I was just part of the whole thing.
You only did it because you were ordered by superiors to do it. Yeah.
It doesn't work here. So many of those guys – and I'm going to say so many – must have thought, this is wrong. What can I do about it? And I would be shocked if at least one or two or three didn't go to Hinch or Luno or probably not Crane himself, but one of those guys to say, I am not good with this.
Well, this
is not right.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, Verlander yesterday said he should have said more or been more vocal, however he phrased it necessarily. And You know, Riddick said he should have stopped it. All these other guys said they should have stopped it. I think most of the players, to their credit, and I think the players have been the most accountable. The players yesterday, including Correa, said flat out, no, Carlos Beltran didn't make us do it. He took complete and total accountability for it.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah.
Here is Justin Verlander. The quote you're talking about, Seth, here's Justin Verlander.
You know, looking back, I can't go back. I can't reverse my decision. Like I said, I wish I had said more and I didn't. And for that, I'm sorry.
What did you say?
That's between myself and my teammates. I'll leave it at that.
You know, Adam Spillane pointed out yesterday that the Astros had worked over Verlander pretty good when he came in with the Tigers earlier that season. I think our guy Brandon Scott, asked Verlander about that, and Verlander said he hadn't thought about it up until that point. Yeah. I'm not sure if I completely believe that.
Of course he's thought about it. Oh, that's why you guys rocked me. Oh, now I get it. All right, so let's do some of this. No, I'm not saying he felt like that. Maybe he did say, let's not do this, but he is the new guy.
Yeah.
And you guys have been talking about it. It's easy to understand how it happens, all right? But that it happened is not good. And it's for people ask, is it tainted or not? Would they have wanted any? Of course it's tainted. Yeah. It's tainted forever. It's majorly tainted. Yeah. There's no way it's not tainted. You cannot excuse this. You cannot just shuffle it away, sweep it under the rug. It's totally tainted.
Question is, though, Mark,
yes.
How tainted? Because Correa, to his
how
credit.
How tainted?
To credit. No, to it's Correa's tainted. Credit also. Like, look, did it help them with playoff seeding and whatnot? Because Correa, I think, is the only guy that came out and said, well, yeah, we would have used it during the playoffs, but it wasn't going to work. He said they had the garbage cans lined up and ready and everything, but it's just it was too loud. And also,
we had the garbage cans. We had a batting order of garbage cans.
Yeah,
we had to get new ones because we were just beating the crap out of these garbage cans.
We're
at Home Depot an awful lot that year, okay?
The Astros' own internal emails, which are incriminating, also, though, do show that by September, they didn't think the scheme was working anymore because teams were wise to it.
Let me ask you this. Does this not draw everything into question? And I know the buzzers have been denied and everything. I'm not saying they used buzzers, but it's like, we were lying about that, but we're not lying about this, okay? I was lying about that, but I'm definitely not lying now, so believe me, I'm not lying. Now, the other thing is this. Major League Baseball, how deep do they want to go? Because if 7, 8, whatever the number of teams that are doing stuff like this, and I guess they're not using garbage cans because we would have seen those videos by now, what are they doing, right?
This is why Bolsinger's lawsuit needs to get traction. Bolsinger's lawsuit against the Astros needs to get traction so that there will all of a sudden be people from teams not named the Astros that are now having to do depositions, speak under oath, speak at the risk of perjury.
Yeah.
That would be a beautiful thing.
And why is that important? Because then there would be actual evidence. The thing with the buzzers, Mark, is you're correct in that the Astros lose credibility, that their denial isn't going to necessarily mean anything to anybody. But that doesn't give you free license to accuse them of any and everything and say, well, it must be true because I don't believe your denial. You're guilty of jaywalking. Well, now I accuse you of murder, and because you lied about the jaywalking, then it must be true.
You're absolutely right. You cannot draw conclusions, but you can question based on what has happened.
Yeah.
So things can be questioned. Now, the Red Sox did this in 2018, and the Astros were clean by then. Really? Okay, but let's just say they were. I'm with Sean here that you got to dig deeper, but maybe they don't want to. Because let me ask you this.
Maybe Major League Baseball doesn't want to.
Major League Baseball. Maybe they're like, all right, this is what we're going to do. This is bad. We're gonna suspend the GM and the manager, and maybe it's a wink-wink with Crane. Then you're going to whack them, and then we're just going to apologize and move on. And then we'll investigate the Red Sox and do whatever we do with them, and we're done with this. Because we cannot have this. It's a major stain on the game. Is it worse than steroids? That's a good question. I mean, is the steroid era, does everyone remember when it was either Canseco, Caminiti, or both, when the numbers started to come out that 50 to 90% of players were using some kind of banned performance-enhancing substance, whether it was HGH, steroids, whatever, and it was like, wait a minute, that cannot be true. Hold on a moment. But it turned out to be true.
The weird thing is that baseball has, I would imagine to the casual fan, has never been more intriguing than it is right now in the last 20 or maybe since the steroid era.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner, okay? So this is Manfred crazy like a fox.
Right.
There is so much interest right now in this game. Everybody's talking about baseball right now. Right. Who would be talking about baseball right now nationally? Nobody.
Nobody.
But now everybody is.
How many national games will the Astros get this year? And will people view that
every
as somehow
one.
Rewarding them? But I feel like if you put them on Sunday Night Baseball, on the every time they're on the road on a Sunday, if you put them on Sunday Night Baseball, I feel like they will absolutely crush records.
Yeah.
And I think Major League Baseball needs to embrace this.
Especially if they keep winning. It needs to be one extreme or the other. If they keep winning at 107 win pace, or they need to be just getting destroyed like a pinata so everybody's showing up at the party every Sunday to watch them get waylaid.
They're a really good team. They're a really talented team. They're going to be good. I think the football equivalent of this is intercepting the signal from the coach to the quarterback or from upstairs to downstairs. And
a good one. Can you imagine?
Right. Can you imagine if that happened in a Super Bowl or a Super Bowl season?
Holy smokes.
The Chiefs have been intercepting signals from the coach to the quarterback, and they couldn't tell exactly what the play was because Wasp, whatever, you know, like the Chiefs. I'm just trying to name the play the Chiefs ran to Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Never mind about that. But if you could tell if it was run or pass,
yeah,
that's huge. And that's all they really got in baseball, right? Is it a fastball or anything else? Well, in football, the equivalent would be, is it a run or a pass? If I know it's a run, let's load up, baby.
Yeah.
And that, look, it's hard to adjust on the fly just like it is for a batter, but clearly it did something for them, just like it would do something for a defense. If that happened in football, there would be a federal investigation.
Yeah, and I think that, football, for one thing they've done is because of the electronic communications that it makes a lot of this espionage impossible because you're relaying the calls in via radio and whatnot. You're not necessarily, you're given, there's less temptation to cheat, which is why if there's some kind of scheme, if there's some kind of way for pitchers and catchers to communicate electronically, then it's a lot less likely to ever be an issue again.
Do you think the question has been asked inside an NFL building, how do we intercept the transmission between the play caller and the quarterback?
They randomize it. The NFL has figured that somebody would.
Okay.
So they randomize the frequencies and everything. That's why when the frequency goes out, you think, how could they have this technology messed up? It's because they've gotten pretty complex with the technology.
Those frequency guys are no joke, okay?
Yeah.
We deal with them because Johnny on the sideline, right, he hears our signal, all right? And he's got it. That's a wireless signal. And all the frequencies are heavily monitored in an NFL building. So if you go in with a sideline reporter and you have those frequencies, you got to get them cleared. They come to your booth. You know, Jonesy knows all about this. They come to your booth, and they're very thorough.
My question was, do you think the question has been asked in an NFL building, do you think we can intercept
that?
In
Massachusetts?
Yeah, 100%. Look, history has a glorious history, or excuse me, football has a glorious history of cheating and going back to the Pop Warner day. Pop Warner at one point had jerseys fashioned that had pockets in the back so somebody could put the football up inside the pocket. It wasn't cheating because it wasn't specifically against the rules.
Right.
And then the next year they came up with a war. They had to create a rule that you're not allowed to use jersey pockets and stuff like
that. No papoose.
The tearaway jersey, all these things. There's kind of, Paul Brown put radios in guys' helmets before it was legal or it wasn't necessarily illegal yet. Like all this. So yeah, that
stick
goes
em.
On. Yeah, stick the stick 'em stuff.
Back
in
the day.
All right, Martin.
Well, we used to spray silicone on our this is the closest to Deflategate. We used to spray silicone on our jerseys to keep guys from being able to hold you as well. And as far as I knew, when I was a rookie, I came in and everybody did it.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you thought it was legal?
I thought, I knew it was illegal, but it wasn't enforced.
Right.
And it was just like the older guys told me, that's what you do.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right,
they don't enforce
it.
It's on the margins.
Then one year in the playoffs, the Broncos got caught doing it because the Chiefs complained about it. They fined the Broncos the next week, and nobody overturned anything or anything. And then you moved on. And then we never did it again,
okay.
Because they started enforcing it. If we had gone on to continue to do it after they obviously made it clear that you don't do it, then that's
they would have
issue.
Fired the coach and GM.
Yeah.
And the owner would have stood up there and given a weird nebulous statement about things because that's how it's handled. All right, Mark Vandermeer's in studio with us for the 8 o'clock hour. XFL Week 1 in the books, XFL Week 2 coming up. What rules that we've seen in the XFL would Mark Vandermeer take and put into the NFL rulebook? We'll hit that and more next. Mark's in studio with us, and the caption there kind of backs up what you've been saying throughout the morning, where it says, Astros apologize for sign-stealing scheme, And then beneath it, it says, owner Jim Crane, manager Dusty Baker, Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve spoke Thursday. And I get it. It's a caption on a TV screen, but those things create narratives. And it seems like most of the nation ignores the fact that there were multiple, much more open and free-flowing conversations taking place in open clubhouse than took place with the sham of the press conference that took place yesterday. Like,
yeah.
those aren't the only four people that spoke. There are many other people that spoke very, very fluently and eloquently on this whole
thing.
Those
are the highlights. And why even mention Dusty right there?
I mean,
poor Dusty wasn't here for it all, and he's got to clean up the mess, if you will. But, you know, he's actually getting into a pretty good situation talent-wise. But as far as the aftermath of it all, Dusty's got to deal with it, you know, and everywhere they go, it's going to be discussed.
Yeah. Everywhere we go, people want to know, did you wear it?
Yeah.
Wear what? The buzzer. So I think the other guy I felt bad about yesterday was James Click. James Click, the new general manager who comes over from Tampa, a place that has a good reputation for developing pitchers, by the way.
Yes.
Remember, when Charlie Morton left here,
and
he goes to, Charlie Morton left here, and I think a lot of people said, oh, wow, look, a pitcher can leave the Astros and still be as good when he goes to a new place. Well, the Rays do a pretty good job with that.
Yeah.
So we don't know about Gerrit Cole. Maybe Gerrit Cole.
What's worse, ineligible player in college? Or this. You know, I was at UMass when we went to the Final Four and Marcus Camby was eventually declared ineligible. All right. And for a school like UMass, believe me, the Final Four was a ridiculous achievement. It was amazing to think of at the time. They had done nothing before virtually and nothing since. But the feeling is now, you went, you know, ineligible. Okay, whatever. He kind of went to class and, you know, he did. And he's actually a smart guy, but he took a few things that he shouldn't have that year.
I guess when it comes down to, I mean, if with the NCAA, it's all about what is it? What's the term they use when you have the culture of
Lack of institutional
lack
control,
of institutional
which is
control.
What this is. Okay,
right.
This is. I mean, Jim
100%.
Crane, God bless him, but I mean, he's got to feel awful about this whole thing,
right? Because and then that's where Crane lost a little credibility yesterday too, or where it didn't go as well is where he's trying to pass it off like he was completely ignorant to everything. Until the report came out where, no, all you had to say was, I should have done more. That's what the players kept saying. I should have done more. They asked, he was really trying to keep it such an arm's distance because what he should have said was, if I had been more involved, if I had followed up on some of these rumors and said, don't do this. But where I'll also simultaneously cut him a break, and that's where this is such an ambiguous situation, is unless you're in the clubhouse, unless you're in baseball, all you know, even as an owner, or it's probably sometimes as a general manager, is that the clubhouse and the unwritten rules and all of those are all kind of murky and there's a whole tradition revolving around it. I could see myself as an owner hearing some of the rumors or accusations and asking, and if somebody told me, boy, it's tough if I play this role-playing game, I don't know if I would have handled it the right way.
Yeah.
I'd like to think I would have, but I don't know if I would have.
It's one thing to get beat, but don't get embarrassed in a way that is going to taint things and bring ethics into question like this, and they are questioned.
Well, Dave Hudgens, who's now with the Blue Jays, who was the hitting coach at the time, he's come out and said that he was aware of it, he knew about it, he wishes he had said more, and yet he just let it go on and didn't really ask any follow-up or tough questions. I think a lot of guys get into that compartmentalization mode where, all right, I'm not involved and I don't know what's going on and I don't want to, it's kind of a see no evil, hear no evil. And you, even though you're aware of it, you try to just be in denial about it.
Yeah.
Manfred said before, knock it off, right?
Yeah.
Clearly, that was not enough for some of the teams involved in whatever they're into. And they better hope that none of them get discovered. Okay, well, we'll get the Red Sox info. And the other thing is this. They better pray that, you know, they're denying the buzzers, and I hope there were no buzzers. If there turns out to have been a buzzer involved at any time, it is, I mean, you want to talk about not a good look.
Ooh, it's going to be nuclear.
Yeah, it's going to be so awful.
Yep. Mark Vandermeer in studio with us. Mark, did you happen to catch any of the XFL Week 1
I watched
action?
A little of it. You know, I love football, and I've always said for a long time, and I think spring football, there's a place for it. USFL, I'm an old USFL guy. You know, I went to Boston University, and there you had a dorm room right above the field.
Yeah, all right? The Breakers.
The Boston Breakers. And Johnny Walton, who's one of my favorite quarterbacks ever, was playing for that team. Nobody remembers that. But Carl Smith, who's the quarterbacks coach for the Texans, was with the Philadelphia Stars. So was Dom Capers. I mean, a lot of guys started in the USFL. We know that history. That league was actually kind of working, but they were overpaying players. They had too many star players. and they wanted to compete with the NFL. Trump owned one of the teams, and they went belly up, and they won the lawsuit with the NFL, but they only won $3.
Because they botched the well, and honestly, and this is 100%. I think honestly, anybody would agree with me on this. Trump took the stand in that trial. And as I think the most ardent Trump supporters would tell you, that's a bad idea. Yeah. That was Trump kind of botched the trial there.
He and the L.A. owner really wanted to attack the NFL.
It right. Well, no, idea. And it was also, the USFL botched it at the very last moment. And basically just it could have been a bigger award that would have worked and it didn't.
The AFL worked because there were enough markets that were big enough to support professional football teams. And it made sense to adopt the AFL to merge. Anyway. As far as this goes, though, some of the rules are interesting. Okay, I love the overtime. I love taking five shots from the five-yard line like soccer penalty kicks. I hate the way the NFL is going with overtime. I don't like the extra possession. I don't like the idea of an extra possession if the team that has the opening kickoff or wins the opening kickoff scores a touchdown, which is being proposed based on what happened with the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Championship game after the 2018 season. I don't like any of that because, to me, overtime should be kind of a sudden death thing if you're going to play a period of football or get into that, or do it like this, five shots on the five. I think you should incentivize the coaches to win the game in regulation as much as possible. You've played 60 minutes of football. That's enough. It's just like golf with the extra holes and stuff. Just bring it out to the 150 and do a dart throwing contest and see, you know, they take all this extra time. Overtime in sport, in the NBA, do we have to do even 5 minutes? Just do 3 minutes. Let's get a couple of crunch time possessions going because you've already played a 48-minute basketball game. Well, let's go home.
I think that's where the 1-, 2-, and 3-point conversions will come into play where, for one, maybe there's instances where teams just feel better about, okay, I can win this with a 3-point conversion right now. Screw it. Whatever. But also, you're going to get the asymmetrical scores.
Yeah.
If people start going for 1, 2, or 3, you're not going to end up with as many 17-17 at the end of the game.
True.
Yeah. So,
true.
That might work.
We might not see that overtime is what you're saying.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? The five shots on the 5-yard line, each shot is worth 2 points, all right? And you go until somebody has an insurmountable lead.
I love it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I think the league, I mean, usually like with the Arena Football League is the one that you want to look to as a model because that was financially viable. And it wasn't until there started to be issues with labor and the union. This will be a little bit different, I think, because if there's one thing Vince McMahon knows, and I know this from the WWE, he knows how to keep a finger on labor. Like they are under lock and key, and there's not a whole lot they can do about it. So I think that will be all right. And as long as they get 15,000 to 20,000 people per game, and they have a TV contract, then you're the MLS, the MLS is financially.
You got to be okay with that. Like you get a 3 or a 4 rating nationally, that's really great in the spring. It's going to outdo the NBA and a whole lot of other stuff. And like last week, they got good numbers, and we'll see what happens as the weeks go on. But you got to be okay with those low numbers.
He's not trying to compete. Those aren't low numbers for where the realm
for
he's
where
in.
They're at. Right.
Like look at what
for the NFL that would be a total meltdown.
But he's become a billionaire with a niche product. Like the WWE is a niche product, but he's become a billionaire with that, and I think he understands that.
Mark Vandermeer in studio with us. Mark, have you been tracking any of the former Texans that are in the XFL? There's some interesting names floating around out there, including a couple that I were...
Charles James.
Well, Charles, we actually had Charles James on the show.
You did?
Before the season started.
You had
started.
To dump him because he swore.
Yeah.
Charles!
He said the S word.
I mean, if I'm Charles, and when I retire, I have to live in this city.
Yeah.
This is where I became, quote, famous.
The two names that I'm thinking of here are, and I want to get your reaction to each of these, Sam Montgomery is with, I forget which team, and Keith Mumphrey is with the St. Louis team.
And Keith Mumphrey, you know, he was cleared of everything that was allegedly going on at Michigan State. So it's great to see him playing some professional football right now. I mean, I'm glad there's a place for these guys to play football. I always think basketball is a great sport because you can play it all over the planet, right? Go many places on planet Earth and play this game for decent money. You know, you talk to a guy like Darren Fells, and the money was pretty good when he was playing overseas, Mexico and Europe and wherever else he was. But for football, there's just not a whole lot of opportunity to do that. So I'm glad there's another avenue for these guys.
Yeah, for sure. Seth, you brought this up. The NFL kind of taking – the NFL hasn't said really anything about the XFL. You know, they've just been kind of – laying back, no shade thrown, no anything.
Yeah, I don't feel like they look at it like competition or anything. They're not trying to take it. The competition will be for prospects. Where, and this happened already with one of the core, it was Landry Jones, I think. The NFL.
It was Josh Johnson.
And it happened with Landry Jones.
Did it happen with Landry Jones?
And NFL teams wanted to sign them, and the XFL said, nope, they're under contract. Yep. They're with us.
Yeah, but I think the XFL, they're going to try to play some ball here, if you will. Grant me that. They're going to play ball with the NFL and allow some guys to move on. It's in their best interest that some of their players move on to the National Football League, and they sort of have this unofficial partnership if they can try to develop that. I'm not sure how that's going to work out long term. Look, this league might not even last more than a season. They are much better funded than the league last year, than the AAAFF, whatever they were called.
No, I think players like P.J. Walker, if all of a sudden, you know, he has a really good season and some team out there thinks, wow, that would be an intriguing backup quarterback to have on my staff or at least come into camp. He can come in, be in camp, and then if he doesn't make a team, then he signs with the XFL and do the whole thing next year.
The Texans wouldn't even have to pay travel expenses. Yeah, he's right here. Yeah. All right, speaking of the Texans, Battle Red Blog has a post on the Texans 2019 season. Some interesting – they go by the numbers. It's Matt Weston, and he digs into some interesting numbers here that I want to run through these with we'll run through these with Mark Vandermeer.
Do it.
In studio with us for another segment, as he will be every Friday in the 8 o'clock hour. Stay there. We'll go through that next on Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Think about relegation between the NFL and the XFL. Don't get me started with a good time. I'm all for relegation sports. That would be fun as hell.
How about in the NBA? All right, make the league a little smaller.
Yeah.
And then make another league.
Yeah.
That would be cool. You want to add excitement? Do that.
Yes.
How about this? I think Johnny and I came up with this. Go best of three in the playoffs, double elimination. Let's have a good time. Let's party.
Yeah, that is a party. Boy, you guys sure do know how to party over there at NRG Stadium.
Yes, we do.
You and Johnny concocting playoff formats.
Party time.
Yeah. I think Power 5, Group of 5 relegation would be phenomenal in college sports.
Oh, my
gosh. How great would that be?
That would be great. Look, I think that in college sports, you got to separate the haves and the have-nots anyway.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, when college football went to 12 games, I thought, oh, great, we're going to play some. No, we're not. We're not going to play good games.
No.
We're going to play a 1AA team or FCS, and
cash
we're going to make
check.
Some more money,
yep.
Except your attendance is dwindling to nothing because you're playing those schools.
Right.
So where are you going here?
Yeah.
Get the good games together, shorten the season. Somebody told me that Penn State is thinking of, or they're actually going to do this, knock out seats and build like the sort of club level experience because a lot of stadiums, a lot of arenas are going to this.
For the wealthy alumni.
Well,
and whatever,
it's not just the wealth; it's the experience. It's people not see, you know,
oh,
people
that's
don't
want to
go sit in the seats anymore. They want to be free and they want to have their phones and they want to do stuff. And that's just where it's going right now.
It was if there were only a way to actually, you know, it almost needs to be like the Oscars where you have seat fillers. Where when somebody gets up to go and have 8 martinis at the in the club, that somebody fills their seat. Because a lot of times where it looks like the stadium is half empty, it's because the damn club levels, the clubs are so comfortable.
They're
great. And they've got huge TVs in there.
Even at NRG, the food is so good. You have Killins. You have all this great stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you make the experience so good in the concourse, it's like, get back to the seat though. Watch
right,
the game.
Right. All right, so Battle Red Blog, is this a Matt Weston post?
It is,
Seth? Yeah, it's really, really good. It kind of does a dissection of the Texans' 2019 season based on some of the numbers. Mark, we thought this would be great to go through with you just to see how much here matches what the eye test says.
Yeah. I did my homework.
Good, good.
I did read it.
Well, let's start with the overall performance of the team. And look, I think every Texan fan knows this is a team that won a lot of close games in 2019. And a lot of those close games were won because Deshaun Watson makes great plays at great times. I think of the Raider game in particular, obviously the playoff game as well against Buffalo. They finished 2.2 wins over what their expectation was, the old Pythagorean thing where they go, well, you played well enough to win 7.8 games, but you really went 10-6. Nice job.
Right.
So what are your thoughts on this team? Are you one of those, you are what your record is, or do you feel like this is a team whose record maybe wasn't an overall indicator of how well they play?
Well, here's the thing. You won a lot of close games, and that's a good thing.
Yes.
I mean, this is the NFL. The games tend to be close, okay? You tend to have close games in this league. It's designed that way. I love these analytics because you look at PFF, And who is the highest ranked Texans player?
Pro Football Focus, by the
way. Right. Yep. Yeah. And I think it was Hopkins, right?
Hopkins
was
at 39th overall.
All right, 39th overall. And Watson was where? In the 80s or
87,
something?
87. Yeah.
All right. So we're saying here that they don't have these top flight players. Is that what we're saying?
No, it's actually a really good thing to be on the top 100.
To be in the top 100.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, only three teams on average per team.
Where was Watson ranked among the quarterbacks?
Eighth.
Okay, yeah. He's eighth ranked quarterback, and Hopkins is the whatever ranked receiver, according to Pro Football
Focus.
Yeah, and
in that list, they said, look, we know quarterbacks are actually more valuable, and the top 10 should all be quarterbacks, but we're just doing this independent of position here.
But I love how people look at this, and they're like, well, and the defense is no good, and look at these guys, and we have the eighth quarterback, and the coaching's no good. But they won the division again and went 10-6. Like, they win football games. This team wins. You know, I get the disappointment, and it's tremendously disappointing what happened in Kansas City. I will never back away from that. That's a major disappointment. It's heartbreaking. It is everything that you're feeling. However, we also have to look at this as these should be the good times. You've got a great quarterback. You're going to the playoffs almost every year. I mean, eventually it's going to happen, and you just have to make it happen somehow.
Well, this is the interesting thing, because every year – by these metrics, Bill O'Brien has actually outperformed the expected wins every year except the year that Deshaun got injured.
So what does that say?
Well, this is where it's interesting, because some people would say that most of the time winning one-score games, winning the close games, is mostly a matter of luck. I've heard some stats people say, okay, well, but that's not necessarily always the case. We don't know that. With Bill O'Brien, and I'd be interested, because I know a few guys are Pro Football Focus, I'll ask him about this. With Bill O'Brien, it is interesting, because it's at the point now where it's happened so many times that he may have a certain skill in winning close games, or maybe he keeps games closer than they should be when they should be wins. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it's happened enough times now that I think the sample size is large enough that I'm open to giving Bill O'Brien credit for that. You know, and
for winning close games.
Yeah, and you could go a bunch of different directions to try to say it's a good thing or a bad thing, but they seem to have some knack for winning more games than the expected win totals.
Well, and that's what they talk about, culture, and they talk about all those other things, and anything to get an edge, and the nutrition, and the strength, and whatever it is, in the fourth quarter when you have to make a play. And look, yeah. I know the defense's numbers and everything, but look at, say, the Colts game when Brennan Scarlett stops Brissett from that fourth down scramble by inches, and okay, you get the football right there. That's winning a close game. That's making a play at the moment of truth, and they tend to make those plays more often than not. And I know they didn't do it in Kansas City, but more often than not, they make those plays. And I think that, you know, Weston at one point in the article uses the M word, mediocre. Look, winning 10 games, winning your division more often than not is not mediocre. It's good. It's not great. It's not Super Bowl. They're not there yet. We all want to see them get there. But I think they have to acknowledge that they've done some things here, and they have to get to that next level somehow.
Well, I think as far as...
All right, I'll back off.
What's that?
I'm trying to agree with you. I'll calm down now. Okay.
Well, I think part of it is also, though, when you think about the close games, and the stat that jumped into my brain is I'm talking about why they might win those close games is how good DeAndre Hopkins has been in the fourth quarter over the course of his career.
Yeah,
very good in the fourth quarter.
He talks about Hopkins in this article, how it was less of the sideline toe tappers this year. They're using him in the slot. They're using look, he had the game against the Chiefs, right? What was that, 55 receiving yards on like 9 catches or something?
Yeah, but if you watch the game, super impactful, right?
I mean, really amazing. The fourth down, I mean, to me, and I always say this, he's like a basketball player. When you need a big bucket, he's going to get you that first down, that touchdown, that big play. I mean, he's your go-to guy, literally, and it's a beautiful thing to watch. I don't care if it's 5 yards, 10 yards, or 100 yards, he's going to get you that big catch when you need it, more often than not.
Well, I think as we shift to the offense in this article, and we're going through this Battle Red blog post by Matt West and kind of dissecting the Texans' 2019 season by the numbers with Mark Vandermeer in studio with us, I think the one thing we can all agree on that Bill O'Brien and the offensive staff needs to figure out, they got to figure out a way to score points when Will Fuller's not on the field.
I mean, the differential.
27.2 points per game with Fuller on the field for a full game, 17.2 points per game without Fuller, including the two games where he left in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Indianapolis and Tampa Bay.
So he counts that as a missed game for Fuller.
And he should. He hardly played. He only played like 4 plays.
And I asked Bill O'Brien once on his show, like, how hard is it to game plan when you have Will and then he goes out? And then what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, obviously you have plays you can run and you've practiced those situations, but it's different when you go into a game and you know you don't have him, as opposed to we got him and oh my gosh, he's out of the game in the first quarter. Now what do? We got to compete somehow. It's not like they're barren, but He was part of the whole mix. He was part of a game plan. You were hoping to have him for that contest, and you didn't. So I think as the year went on, they were like, all right, we got to get ready for this thing, like will or no will, and have our plan. But he's so good that when he's out there healthy, because against the Chiefs, who knows how healthy or unhealthy right. he was. But when he's out there healthy, gosh, what a difference he makes.
Well, and that's where, too, I think if there's something I want to see more of next year, it's obviously more tight end involvement always. Like, always and forever. Even if you've got the best tight ends in the league, I'd always say, yeah, I want more. Because the tight ends can open things up for receivers the same way receivers.
You see Kelce and Kittle and what these guys do, you want that.
And then I think getting the running backs involved in the passing game, too. And I think at least partly this year it was that your two main running backs were relatively new additions to the team. Mm-hmm. And perhaps it wasn't, maybe with a full off season, they'll get them more integrated. But there's times where that can make things easier on Deshaun if they're more of a go-to option.
Here's an interesting X factor for next year. And I don't know what he's going to do, but I'm eager to see Waring.
I was just about to ask you about Waring.
I think Waring is going to be really, as long as he can stay healthy and does everything that they want him to do, this could be a really valuable addition. And then who knows what else happens, because they do have a draft.
And I know a lot of people think, well, when the draft is good.
No, they've got a bunch of picks here, and you know they can get some players. You know, you think about Justin Reed as a third rounder, and think about some of the other guys they've gotten.
It's a horrible year for tight ends, so it's good that they took Holly Waring last year, even though you got nothing out of him. There might not be a tight end taken in the top three rounds this year. So
how shocking was Darren Fells this year? I mean, he really, and I know at the end, he had a couple of drops or whatever, but overall, what a phenomenal season.
How do you think that factors in, Mark? Because he I think the biggest surprise, maybe, and maybe his biggest impact on the team was in the red zone. But all the touchdowns virtually were in the first eight games of the year.
Yeah.
He was productivity-wise, he was a different player in the second half of the season.
It kind of changed a little bit. I think Akins, he was more steady as she goes, if you will. I mean, Fells was like explosive, set the tight end receiving touchdown record for the franchise, and then the production might have dropped off where they knew he was, he was out there. I mean, they were game planning against him, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But not having Akins in the postseason, I think, in the Kansas City game, I thought that was a little bit of a factor as well. No excuses. I mean, come on. But it'll be fun to watch them put it together, because at this time last year, we knew Akins was around. I figured Jordan Thomas would be, a factor. But obviously that didn't happen. And as far as Fells, I mean, when they signed Fells, I thought, all right, is this guy even going to make the team? And he did. So, yeah. And he did a lot.
Yeah, he looked like the odd man out there after, let's see. Immediately, you drafted two tight – let's see. 2 years ago, you drafted two tight ends, and Ryan Griffin assaulted a window at the draft. So he was gone.
Yeah.
Then last year, who was the guy that we thought immediately
– Oh, Jarrell Adams.
It feels like you've got your three tight ends this year.
Oh, who are you saying? Like, who we immediately felt like?
I felt like at some point last year they signed. Oh, when they drafted Kyle Waring, we figured Darren Fells was the odd man out somewhere.
Yeah.
And obviously it didn't shake out that way.
Yeah, you just thought he was going to be an extra blocker, and then he turned into a revelation as a receiver. But Watson can make a lot of people into good receivers. Yeah. He will find you. He made Tywan Jones into a hero in that playoff game.
Yeah.
There are, let me ask you this. There are a bunch of offensive tackles. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get sorry, Sean. I'm getting off track here. There's going to be a bunch of really good offensive tackles in the draft this year. You've got your two franchise offensive tackles right now, but I also think that maybe your right tackle could play guard at some point, or you could draft a tackle that could move down to guard. I'd be okay with him taking a tackle.
I think anything's in play, and you need insurance, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you lost Titus Howard, I think you lost something for sure, right?
Yeah.
He went out in the Colts game, the Thursday night prime timer, and you were able to win after that, but the Denver game was right after that. And look, that's not why they lost the Denver game, but Howard would obviously help any cause here. And then you look at those two games they won on the road, which I think were really good wins. Beating the Titans late, beating the Bucks late. Those teams were red hot going in. You were in their building. You were coming off that Denver game. And, oh, my gosh, what is this team? Who is this team? Well, they showed who they were by beating those teams on the road and winning the division. But, with Howard, they would have been a lot better offensively. And I think that they do need some insurance. And maybe they feel great about Johnson. Maybe, Chris Clark was a guy they just signed who used to be with the franchise, of course. But we'll see how they put it together. They have to have depth on that O-line. But that's the thing. Weston talks about, I think he mentioned this. They don't have much to build on. They have a lot to build on with this O-line. This O-line's a great place to start moving forward into the next season.
To me, if they're going to do what you're talking about, Mark, which is go from this stage that they're at here to take it to the next level, one of the non-negotiable things that has to happen for this team, other than Deshaun Watson being great again, is this offensive line has to take a step to where all these metrics that Weston has in here about, you know, a pass rush win rate and sack rate and all these, even running the football as well, they have to move into the top 8 or 9 offensive lines in football. They've got to be an offensive line that matches the amount they've invested in the offensive line.
Yeah, right. Considering what they put into it, they've got to be there. And now maybe you can get some continuity. Imagine that. Imagine 2, 3, 4 years in a row with basically the same guys, at least four out of the five guys.
And they're good players. Right. You know what I mean? Like they're guys who come in with some accolades.
Now, one thing he mentioned in there, which I agree, they have to get more on first down. You know, and Bill O'Brien always talks about getting a lot on first down. I think sometimes he runs on first down just to get, I got to get something here. You know, they got to get out of the mud and they got to get some positive progress here because they've taken so many sacks in 2018. They did, obviously. And, you know, it was better last year, but it's not where they want it to be. So they have to work on that.
Where do you think they go defensively? Obviously, the numbers were not great last year, especially in pass defense and pressuring the passer once JJ went out in week 8, and he still led the team for the season in quarterback hits and pressures, which is unacceptable.
Got to fix it.
Yeah, got to fix that. Where do you prioritize as you head into the shopping season?
Well, I think
here?
That you look at Martin as a plus here. I love getting Ejiofor back. Let's see what he can do. Amenahu in year 2 is going to be a better pass rusher, not that he's coming off the edge or anything like that, because it doesn't always have to come off the edge, right? I mean, you have to get stuff up the middle in order to make those edge guys more effective, in order to flush the quarterback out and make hay that way. Look, they'll probably find a way to get an edge guy, all right? And I'm not saying a free agent necessarily, but somebody who can help them either in the draft, maybe free agency, to add to that mix. And I know they have some players already, but look, guys get hurt. We see this happen every year. You know, you cannot have enough of that.
Yeah, especially at that spot. That's crucial. Mark Vandermeer in studio with us. He joins us every Friday in the 8 o'clock hour. You have anything planned for Valentine's Day with Vanderweiss?
So is Valentine's Day – how do you – look, if you listen to this radio station and you forgot about Valentine's Day, shame on you.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys remind everybody every 10 minutes that it's Valentine's Day.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, we tend to not, like, do the heavy restaurant thing on Valentine's Day because the restaurant, you know –
they're packed.
It gets a little full, you know?
Yeah. And then you might see somebody getting proposed to or something. That's disgusting, you know?
What you guys did a year ago at a restaurant.
Yeah, but I don't want to be next to it if you're strangers.
You did it on Valentine's Day?
No, I did it. We did it right before Christmas, but it was in a restaurant,
Well, I did it in a restaurant, too, but I don't want to see that.
Were you disgusted with yourself?
Yeah. No, I just want to be next to somebody emotional.
Is that a man card violation to propose to somebody in a restaurant on Valentine's Day? It's going to make everybody else look bad.
Ooh.
All right, everyone's going to
hate
you.
I never thought of that. I mean, I didn't get on a knee or
anything. Oh, thanks a lot. And what if you're like one of those couples where it's like, she's waiting for you to ask, but you haven't asked her yet, right? And then the guy on like, a few tables
that's
down
That was me for 7 years.
Yeah. I never thought of that.
Every time you hear about somebody, yes, are you going to do this, Sean?
I got a lot of that. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't do it on Valentine's Day, though. I guess that's the thing. So I didn't make anybody else feel bad, I guess, other than that they were just randomly. Yeah.
Poor guys who are planning it for tonight have now pulled back, okay? But when you
don't do it, buddy. Don't pull back. Do the proposal.
Yeah, you know, and when you have a ring, it burns a hole in your pocket. It's like, I can't hold on to this anymore.
Yeah.
It's like on fire. You have to get rid of that ring.
I'd be afraid I'd lose it.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Vandermeer, Mark, we appreciate it.
All right, guys, it was fun. Let's do it again next week. Let's rock.
Sounds great. Mark Vandermeer in studio with us on Fridays here in the 8 o'clock hour. Up next, several PR experts have weighed in on the Astros' performance yesterday. We have the results. The destruction begins next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.